as two peoples, as all the people in the world. And this is just a small part of this Turtle Island and the whole world. And if we can educate and start maybe change the minds of this small area here, then I guess I think it's worth it to try and do that. How successful we are is all depends on everybody. We don't put it all on one person, but we all have to to start doing things differently and thinking about things differently. What's important? What's the future going to be? So as a chief, given that duty to look out for those what we call the faces that are still beneath the ground, and that's the future and the children. But I just like to let's hand over to Audrey a little bit and have her say a little bit about
it. Yeah, well, again, I would like to go back to the opening here of this meeting, and it tells me that we have come a long way in this educating one another and sharing with one another in the acknowledgement at this time of this meeting tonight, that we would have first the opening given by our leadership in our customary traditional way, which has been handed down to us from generations, we don't know how many. So I'm very thankful for those of our friends and our relatives who have been working side by side with us for quite a number of years now, that they have come to understand that much of us, that this is how our people would begin a gathering. They know, just by our dealings together, that this is first whenever our people gather. And so I have to give thanks for all those people who have worked so hard by our sides to bring about an understanding, to bring about an understanding of the why for all of this claim, the why for all of these meetings that are going to be coming about with many other speakers touching on different areas that I'm sure everyone has questions about, and some may know a little bit more about than others. But to me, personally, that is a big step to know and find out that our friends, our relatives, the people who have been working with us, acknowledge that this is the way we would begin a gathering of people. So thank you again for all those who have put their efforts into this meeting. As was said, our opening address is a thanksgiving, an acknowledgement, respectfully, for all that we appreciate in this living, for every minute, every moment of our lives, for every day, for every year of our lives. And when we think of it day by day or moment by moment, sometimes we have more than one meeting or gathering during a day, during a single day. And we go through this for how many gatherings there might have to be in a certain time, in a certain day. But to realize that we can give thanks is what is the main thing that has been handed down to our people. And our people were persecuted for hanging on to these beliefs. Our people have suffered persecution down through the years for persevering, for hanging on, and for being steady and strong. Because there were times after the new people came to this land with many new things that made life much easier, it would seem. Didn't take much time to do the things that we would do ordinarily. Well, we still do those things, and sometimes our people use now today's inventions, so they don't have people standing for hours pounding the corn for our ceremonies. And also the stoves with their gas and electricity, excuse me, can cook up the things that take time. They're not really hard to do, but everything takes time, much, much more time when we do things the old way. So while we can give thanks every day that we still have the old things, the old ways, the old ceremonies, and some of our people use the newer kinds of machinery and that industry has brought, it has been a time for our people that has always been that battle of keeping on to our ways and trying to pass on to the young people the importance of the old ways. In the times when the new things came to our people and things were easier to do and changes came about very quickly, those who clung to the traditional ways and who wanted to keep those traditional ways and who lived for carrying on those traditional ways, spiritual ways, had to hide in the bush because when they were persecuted by even our own people now, who had been led to believe that another way, almost any way, was better than the way that our ancestors believed in following, in the way that was given to them from the beginning of our time. And from the beginning of our time, giving thanks was the first in our history. The ceremonies that we do were given first in our history. The ways to give thanks for everything that we use in order to survive, in order to live in our daily lives. And so, as was gone through this evening, our Thanksgiving address begins with our Mother Earth. Excuse me, it doesn't begin with the Mother Earth. It begins with the people. We give thanks for the people that we can gather together in this way. And then from the Mother Earth, to all that grows from the earth and everything that comes from what is called the creation. In our language, doesn't really translate exactly into English. It takes a whole explanation of what the whole holistic meaning of those words, those old words, the meanings of them as we give thanks. And so those people who took to the bush in order to hang on and in order to pass on our traditions were really very, very strong people, honorable people. And we honor them. We honor them again very, very close to this time. The moon has changed, and we have a ceremony that will give thanks and honor and acknowledge all those ancestors who stood against, I have to say, who stood against evil, because that's what it was, and that's what it has been, in order to carry on the ceremonies. So we have a great ceremony in all of our longhouses. Now, none of this is strictly Onondaga. All of this belongs to all the Haudenosaunee people. And we all do our ceremonies in our respective times, in our longhouses. And so now we are all preparing for this next one, which comes and specifically acknowledges, gives thanks and respect to those ancient ones. And we don't know how far back, how long ago was, that they stood up and stood strong for what they believed in, for what they had been given. In our language, they were given to us from our Creator, and that's why they have lasted. They have not had to be changed. They have not had to go through a lot of renovation to suit the times that we are living. But we are supposed to be strong enough, have learned that discipline to be able to change whatever it is we are involved in at the time in order to, in order to go by that old way. And there's much repetition in what we do, much repetition in our daily times, in our seasonal ceremonies, and in all that we do. And that repetition is intentional, so that what transpires, the words that are said, the addresses that are made, would become a part of your person, which is what happens to people who will listen and who will have the open mind, open heart, and a spiritual connection to all what is called those old things. I remember people saying that we can't live in the new life without remembering and using the old things, because that's what can make us able to withstand the things that we must withstand in the new life. And it might sound confusing in words, in English words, but it's very true. So much of our time, our times within our own nation, when we have had to rely, and we still do, rely on those old ways, rely on those ancients for help in dealing with the issues that come about in our new life, in our new ways, in the changing world. We have to live with the changes and still be able to be ourselves, still be able to hang on to that spiritual part of our being, which makes us strong, which makes us who we are, and which makes us able to face the issues. We've been through many, many times in Onondaga when the new times would bring about issues that would really excite many, many people, excite most of the people. Oh, we got to do this. It's going to be better for us. It's going to do so much more for us. And our leadership, men and women, have had to stand, make the stand, hold that position, that no, in the long run, it is not what we need. Big difference between our needs and our wants from the very beginning. Excuse me. So the needs and wants of every people are the very same. The very same light should be used. The very same light should be shed on our needs and our wants as we look at our daily lives and we look at what we are doing with our time here on this earth. So we are very thankful for the, I'll call them noon, people who have come for quite a number of years now to our side in our difficult times. And they have been able, the majority of them, to catch on and to understand that spiritual side of ourselves that takes the positions that we must take on the issues in this changing world. So this land rights, the claim I have heard about, say 70 years, because as soon as I could begin to comprehend what I was hearing, people were talking about, this was in their talk, this was in their discussions, that so much of this land would someday, and the waters and the hills would someday be, justice would come about and the lands would be dealt with in a fair and just way. They never said that we're going to run over these people. I never heard anybody say that. I never heard anybody say, oh, we're going to take that all away from them. I never heard that either in all of my life, at least not from the people that I was listening to. There are people who are out for that other side of the other kinds of gains in their claims. But I never heard that. I have heard our people discussing since I was very little, all my growing years. They had different times when they would raise money. And raising money in those times was a pretty, pretty big job. They would cook and make food and sell food and meat and put a couple pennies in when they would meet, trying to make enough money to make this claim, land claim that was. And there have been times when they came pretty close to talking like they were ready to settle a claim for certain amounts of money. Now this is Haudenosaunee I'm talking about. They were working toward a claim. But there were always, and I can remember one chief especially, and his voice would just boom inside that little longhouse. And he would say, no, we cannot do this. And he wouldn't let them think of it as any other way than selling the land, selling out their rights to the land. And I can remember the time when the lawyer was there and his secretary and a couple of other people who were very much interested in the claim, but I can remember that they were not actually involved in it at that time. And he was asked, they just seemed to have come to a point where they were ready to settle for this great big 80 million acres, is it? I can't remember now the amount of land, but the major part of New York State. And he asked, he got right up from his place where he sat, and he walked over to the lawyer, because the lawyer had not been answering the question that was being asked of him. And he asked him, "Now if we sign for you to go ahead with this claim, are we still going to be the title holders of our lands?" And the lawyer could not answer that yes, we would still be the title holders. I was very young at that time, but I remember it very clearly. And so that was the end of him. And that was the end of that claim. So there have been other people who have tried at different times to bring about a claim, but this particular land rights claim has been in the talking stages for many, many years. And I can remember when they had graph paper out, you know, for everyone to see while they marked out what were the claim areas of the Haudenosaunee claims. And the Haudenosaunee had never made the boundaries. The boundaries had always been made by other than the people. And so this they had to work out. And the people themselves, the leadership themselves, were able to talk and get the understanding to the people that we're not drawing lines like this. It's this is ours, this is theirs, and that. And many, many discussions, many years of discussion in order to make it right, in order to make the land rights claim so that it was not going to be hurting anyone, so that it was going to bring about justice, so that it was going to bring about people being able to live together, which is what the original treaties of our people said. The what they call in English the Turo Wampum is the original people of our peoples between the newcomers and our people who inhabited the land. And within that treaty explains really everything that the other treaties could be explained by if they were lived up to. And many of our people here tonight, I know are supporters or understanding of our claims and our peoples. Within this agreement, this Turo Wampum, it was an agreement that they made so that the people could live together, so that they could coexist in this land, and each would be respectful of the other. Each would be fair to the other, and they would be like brothers. They would be a brotherhood. For within this original treaty, neither one of the peoples involved could be making judgment or could be doing things that would hurt and override their brothers. They were like in two separate vessels, our people in the canoe, and the newcomers were in their big boat. And the laws of each were to be kept within their own vessel. We would keep our own laws, our own ways, our own peoples. They would keep their own laws, their own ways, and their own people. And neither one of these could make judgment over the other. And of course, that's what has happened. That law has, that treaty, that original treaty, has been in most places just ignored, overlooked. And I can remember in my times as secretary of the Haudenosaunee, every time a group, a delegation was sent to Washington, D.C. to talk to congressmen and those in power down there, this Turo Wampum was taken and it was explained to them. Of course, every time a new voting time came about, many of those people were unseated and new ones came in. So the next time our people went down to talk, try to resolve an issue, again, the whole thing had to be repeated. And it was just something that they never bothered to research, to investigate, to find out about, to learn about it, to understand it. So that makes a very, very challenging time for our people, for all time, because that is not abiding by the original treaty. Now, in our claim, our land rights claim, we have no intention of causing harm or pain to another people, like our people have suffered in the past. That would not be right. And what would be right in the eyes of our Creator has been kept in mind as these discussions have been going on through the years. And actually, it's justice that we are seeking. Justice for the whole creation, for the animal life, their habitat are being destroyed unmercifully, for the bird life, for plant life, for the woodlands, everything that we give thanks for in our opening address and our closing address. Are very seriously thought of and considered as we talked or discussed these treaties. The feelings, the spiritual connections have all been utilized in building this land rights action. And as I said, it's been many, many years in the making, and the feeling is that it was just about time before all of creation goes into oblivion or extinction, because whatever befalls the rest of the creation is going to befall the human also. We're told in our way that in this cycle of the great creation, every bit of that creation gives and gives and gives continually. And we are in that cycle. We are one of them. And we are the only component of that great cycle who are taking and taking and taking. So we must give thanks. That is what our mandate is, to be thankful, to acknowledge all the rest of that cycle, and to to give back, to give back our thanks, to give back our acknowledgement means that we would treat them right, that we would treat them well, that we would treat ourselves as well. So it's a great big spiritual connection that goes on within the creation that we have put into the thoughts, into the discussions of this land rights action. And we don't want to feel that we are going to be depriving any other living thing, any people, or any of the other inhabitants of this creation, that we are actually responsible for keeping, for taking care of. So, within the Onondaga Nation, we are, I don't know, about 1,200 people, huh? Just south of the city here. And we have historically, you have probably read it, we have, the Onondagas have been historically the least aggressive, the more humble, or we try to be humble, and the least prone to advancing onto all the new things that come about in the industrial world or in this world of technology now. And the reasons for it is within our ceremonies. They remind us, like the opening address, reminds us of what our relationship should be to all of these other components of the creation that we live off of. So all of that has come into the discussions. All of that has played a major role, a major part of the discussions of our people. And I started to say of the, we are about roughly 1,200 people in our community. And I would say that more than half of our people adhere still to our traditional way, to our longhouse way. We have within our community 5 Christian churches. And we have those who come into the city for their denomination doesn't have a mission on our land. So of those, the other nearly half, I can't say thirds or fourths because it's no straight line. People who attend those Christian churches at the same time attend our traditional ways. They acknowledge and they respect the leadership. They know who the leadership of our nation are and have been continually. And they realize, even though individuals choose to seek personal gain, that happens all over. That's humanity, I guess. The majority of our people at Onondaga look to our traditional leadership and our traditional ways, our ceremonies. Some of the most remote families that you would think send their children, and their children have brought their grandparents. And even just for the need when they grow up, out of their childhood to have a name, because they were never given a name, which is done in the traditional, in our traditional way. Babies are given their names, and everyone should have one. Because when you are given your name, there is a speech that is given within the ceremony, and they tell the clan of the babies, parents, the mother's clan, the father's clan, before, and then when they give the name, they put that name and the word in our language. It's put out into that creation. Your name becomes a part of that creation. That's the meaning of receiving that name. Because now all of the creation will hear it, will know it. You do not fear the rest of the creation, for now they are your allies. They are your brothers. And when your name is put out, and Satsano, this is what it means. So there's a whole lot of meaning to every little thing, I guess I'll say, that we do, even to the giving of our names. And that name is yours until you leave this earth. And when your body remains or placed in the earth, then that name is taken by the clan and it is put away and kept. And for a whole year, no one will use that name. But after the passing of all the seasons, we have it at midwinter time, special ceremony, which tells us now we have come to closure and we're opening up a new season. After that year, then that clan family can use that name again. So every little bit of our tradition is very important. And so much of it has, you know, historical meaning around the lake of Onondaga. So much of it has historical meaning in the creek of Onondaga. And even in my own time, and to say nothing of the times, you know, way, way, way before us. So to try to educate people about our ways and our thinking, I think is very good. And it should be that everyone who hears these messages, who learns these things, should pass it on to those people who are very apprehensive, full of anxiety about what might be happening to this part of the earth. I could go on and on for hours.
Keep going, come on.
But I probably used up more than because every little item has so much story behind it and so much history behind it. It's hard to know. You know, it's hard to isolate anything from everything from each other. We're always connected. We're all family. And we always will be unless we bring about the cutoff. And so when we talk about the Thanksgiving address again, with our mother the earth, our grandmother the moon, our brothers the four-leggeds and the winged ones, our grandfathers the thunderers, we're all connected. We're all spiritually connected. But we have to strive, and it's a big, difficult job in these times to pass that on to our youth. or even the not so young people who are just coming back to their traditional ways. There's so much meaning to life, so much more meaning to life than people understand.
Okay. Well, I have to thank Audrey again for another history lesson myself. Again, you know, this is our history books. This is our History 101 right here. This is our encyclopedias that we learn from as a young leader, from our elders. Their concerns, their experiences, their teachings that have been taught to them and they passed on to us to guide us, to give us kind of the right thinking as to making good decisions. So, and this is, I could sit here a lot longer, listen to her. No problem with hearing more. You know, every time I hear Audrey speak, I learn something about myself and about my people, about Audrey, a little bit about everything and how we're connected, what our responsibilities are. And that's what it's about. That's what it's about as people, as different peoples, all on this land. It's getting along and making sure there is a future for all of our children. And all of the things that have been given to us, so all those things can continue and our people can live in a peaceful and healthy way. And I think that's what our goal here is trying to educate people, educate each other, about each other, about ourselves. And we're all in this together. There's no, you know, that the bad air doesn't stop at any boundary. We all breathe it. The bad waters, we all have to drink it, all have to. If it's not pure, then we all suffer. So it's not any one people's responsibility, it's everybody's. And I think if anything that we can use this is to educate and to make people think more of what's important and what our own responsibility is to ourselves and to each other. And if we can educate a few people and maybe start making them think a little bit different or a lot different, whatever your contribution is to ensure a future for us, then it's worth it. And we've achieved something by talking, by listening, and exchanging thoughts and ideas.
As Audrey said so eloquently, she could talk for many, many more hours, and I think many of us could listen for many more hours. But we did want to have some opportunity for people to ask some questions, since it's the topic of tonight's discussion, the title was The Nation in Our Midst, Onondaga, History, Culture, and Spirituality, covers a very broad area. But I do want to say one brief thing about the title, The Nation in Our Midst. We spent a lot of time talking about the titles of these programs, and we're very conscious of wanting to acknowledge that the Onondaga Nation is indeed a nation. It's a nation in our midst in that it's surrounded by the United States, but that doesn't make it any less of its own independent, autonomous nation in the same spirit that Audrey spoke of with the Turo Wampum. So I want to please invite folks with questions.
I'm Peter Swords. I wanted to thank you for not only giving us the story that you gave us, but also there was a bit of very helpful sensitivity in one of the things you said, Audrey. You made reference to that little bit of fear that some of the other people have about the Onondaga Nation. And I want to appreciate that you have that sensitivity, that understanding, even of what is wrong in our misconceptions about your culture. And what I would like to get at is, maybe you could tell a little bit about how the Onondaga people have focused on children and on health in the way you raise up people. And that would maybe help us to heal our own fears as we raise up our children, because maybe we could do a little bit better job. I think I've heard a little bit before from Orrin Lyons and some other leaders a little bit about how you have raised up children and how you focus on children and health. Maybe we could hear a little bit about that.
Well, as you know, our children go to school with the nearby villages, and some come all the way into the city to school, so that they're sort of mixed in all the time in their childhood lives with all kinds of people. And in keeping our people within our own community healthy, we have most of the homes have their own medicines that they use within their family for sicknesses and for keeping well. And it's not like, and they share this. The new mothers especially are more conscious of trying to have their babies and their little ones now be treated, if they are sick, with natural medicines. This has coming back. And of course, with the food, it's very hard. We don't have many families who don't have a garden, a small garden, so that they would have access to, fruits and vegetables that come from the land and not from a can in a grocery store that was packed halfway across the country. This we have to keep talking and talking and talking, because our young people are mixed up in a world where those kinds of things are not important. So it's just, again, as I mentioned before, that repetition. Young people have a way of not really wanting to listen. Oh, we heard that before, Oh, we got to hear that again. But yes, it had many of the things we have to teach have to be repetitious. And the food, I think the young people are, many of the young people, not all, are picking up themselves the difference between fresh food and good food. It's happening more than a lot of people realize. That young people themselves, we hear a lot about junk food and stuff, and it is horrendous the way it's being used, but we don't hear much about the fact that the young people themselves are beginning to listen and to understand the consequences of watching their diets and looking for fresh foods. We have our own traditional foods that we use pretty much almost entirely for ceremonies. And Everybody knows how to fix that, just about. People teach their children how to fix the ceremonial foods from an early age. But the diet is something that I think all peoples are working on, have to work on. I don't know if this answers your question very much.
Did you want to respond to that at all, Sid, as well? Or?
No, that's
okay. Go ahead.
Abu, you're a very peaceful being, and you exude such great peace. My question,
I'm from up north at the Mohawk Reservation. I live near there. And they did a study of the women, the Native American women on the Mohawk side and the Canadian side of the breast. They were breastfeeding their children, and they discovered a lot of toxins in the breast milk to their children from the water from the Alcoa plant from the St. Lawrence River and Reynolds Metal. So I was wondering if you drew any studies of the water, you know, in your area, that if it does any, has any harmful effects on the babies. Have you done any of those kind of studies in order to help your cause?
I can't understand you too well, but there are studies going on about the water. There have been studies about the water. Not particularly to that issue of the mother's breast milk, but
the harmful effects that it's doing to the children.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's any, like, anybody getting involved to stop the process.
Nothing. Okay. Okay, thank you. We'll take one more, and then I'll do a little wrap-up details, and then we'll go out to join the reception. So please, Ken.
My name is Ken Howland, and excuse me, I'm a student of history, and I'm aware of the fact that your people and also indigenous people of all of our backgrounds were in existence for thousands of years, your people in this area, and there's been more environmental damage in the last 50 years, or perhaps century, than there was in the previous 5,000 years, and I wonder if you have any comment about how to approach the future with respect to the environment and the pollution, which the woman before me just addressed. That was the essence of her question. To get back to more pure agriculture and so on and so forth.
Well, I think the nuclear age, the making of all the nuclear energies have not been conducive to keeping the land or keeping any of the creation, and they went into it rather irresponsibly, and they're still using it irresponsible manner, and many people are suffering from it. As you said, the lands, and there are some lands that cannot be used again for we don't know how long. The thing is, we have been told that the land can heal itself if we would stop, if mankind would stop his attack of pollution.
Yeah, just a little bit on that. After we filed our land rights and start getting into some of the discussion of the cleanup of Onondaga Lake and what's been done to the lake over the last 100 years, dumping waste into the lake and its condition now, we've also other people from out of of the area of our land rights claim area have come to us looking for their problems in their communities, way up in Watertown, down to Binghamton areas, that they're concerned about, and asking us how we can help, because they've been trying to stop the pollution for whatever it is, the industries or of the lakes and the waterways and the lands, and they're looking for ways to get some things done to clean up their parts of the area where they live. So, and I think, and they've gone to the government, and you know, and the government can't do that. They don't. There's so much pollution there that, you know, well, who's responsible for this and who's responsible for that? It's companies. And I think we do have to make people more aware of all the damage that's done, you know, just in this small strip of area that we're concerned about, but also all the people in these areas have their concerns too. And I think we may look to the government that's trying to solve this. So I think we have to, as people of this area, have to take on some responsibility too, and join and be heard, and not to be brushed off by the government and saying, oh, we don't have enough money, or we don't have this program or something, but we as people have to, again, start thinking differently about what we're doing and how we do things. And it's up to us. It's up to us, and it's up to you for your concern for your children, your grandchildren, and their grandchildren. And that seems to be the that should be your main concern, not just yourself at this time, but what are you leaving for them? And how are they going to? How are they going to solve the things that we've not been able to resolve or clean up or change?
On behalf of the organizers, please join me in giving a warm appreciation for Audrey and Sid.
Tadadaho Sid Hill, spiritual leader of the Haudenosaunee, who along with Onondaga clan mother Audrey Shenandoah spoke on February 27th about the land claim of the Onondaga people and their history, culture, and spirituality. This event was the first of a series organized by neighbors of the Onondaga Nation, Noon. The next meeting will be this coming Tuesday, March 7th, at the Syracuse Stage, on the connection between the Haudenosaunee and the women's rights movement. You can find out more about the series and the work of Noon at peacecouncil.net/noon. peacecouncil.net/noon. And learn more about the Onondaga Nation and their land rights action by visiting onondaganation.org. That's onondaganation.org. Thanks to Andy Major and the Syracuse Stage for facilitating this program. You can download an MP3 or podcast of this and prior programs at our website, unwelcomeguests.org. Our theme music, Unwelcome Guest, is performed by Billy Bragg and Wilco, with lyrics by Woody Guthrie. Thank you for listening.